When you go to aim at a turkey, you want his head sitting right on top of the bead. Well, if he were to duck down, you might not see, you know, you block out almost the entire rest of his body by the barrel and the bead. So getting that dot floating out in space allows you to, you know, pull it down on those wattles and squeeze off, and you can still see if he's about to move or something like that.
Good girl, sweetie. That's a big bird. That's a big bird.
Wow. Hey everyone, Nick Larson here, host of the Birdshot Podcast, the show that brings you conversations, stories, and traditions from all across the uplands. The Birdshot Podcast is presented by Onyx Hunt and supported by folks just like you via our Patreon community. If you want to stay up to date and not miss any of our upcoming episodes, be sure to subscribe and follow the show in your podcast player or on YouTube, wherever you're listening or watching today. Tap that button for me. Thank you for doing so. And with that said, let's get into today's conversation on the Birdshot Podcast. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Birdshot Podcast, everybody. Today, I am excited to be joined by Greg. Is it Maher?
Ms. Mayhair.
Mayhair of Metal Creek Mounts. Greg, thanks for joining us. I know you are right in the thick of things. It's a busy time of year, especially for somebody down your way. You guys get to, the fun gets started a little bit earlier than it does for me, but my mind's on turkeys as well.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. We tried this, I don't know, a while back, and we're both busy just trying to get it lined up, but we've got it going today, so I'm excited.
Yeah, basically the listeners wouldn't know any of this, of course, but about a year ago I was trying to get you on because I was really curious about red dot sights and turkey hunting, and we had some technical difficulties and kind of that was sort of towards the tail end of the season, but yeah. Now we're here right on the front end, and things are picking up. I know you've been spending some long hours in the shop, that's for sure. Why don't you give us Greg Mayhair and Metal Creek Mounts in a nutshell?
All right, so. You know, I started turkey hunting in college, so I've been turkey hunting for a little over 20 years, just fell in love with it instantly, and I'm an engineer, so when I saw a need to be able to put optics on a shotgun that aren't drilled and tapped or to get them at a better location on the gun, I just started brainstorming, tested out some stuff for a couple of years, and launched this at the NWTF convention in 2020, and it's just taken off from there, so... I run the business for the most part by myself. I do have help from time to time with packing and stuff like that. But we're in the shop here. We bought a new shop about a year ago, and I'm busy right now. Like you said, I'm down south, so I'm trying to get ready for my season and keep everyone stocked up on what they need. So it's a busy time for sure.
Yeah, man, a small business in the hunting world. Like my mind is. I want to like ask you all kinds of stuff about that, but we'll save that for an offline call or later. Yeah. But I appreciate it because I'm in the thick of it as well when it comes to that, and it's a lot of fun for sure. But I get to do things like this, and you get to do things like this that we could talk to customers and listeners and that sort of thing. Right. So I enjoy that part as well. But okay, so where are you exactly? Are you in Georgia?
I'm in South Carolina.
South Carolina. Okay. Yeah, so when does turkey season start for you guys?
It opens here the 3rd. We moved dates last year back to the 3rd statewide. It used to be a split season, but some stuff has changed. No Jakes. I want to say there's no Strutter decoys. I can't remember. I hunt so many states, it's hard for me to keep up with even what we're doing here. But we open here on the 3rd. Georgia opens this weekend. I hunt a lot in Georgia as well. So
okay. Yeah. I know you do some traveling. We were talking about that last year, and again, this is, I won't belabor this, but turkey hunting in the South is, you know, sort of the history, culture, lore, like you guys have a long history with it. And for me, it's like this brand new thing. Like we just had turkeys. I mean, they've been in Minnesota and Wisconsin for a long time, but up around where I'm at on the shores of Lake Superior, to be able to hunt them here is a relatively new thing. So I don't have any of the history and the culture. And I love talking to people that sort of have that, just sort of, I don't know. I'm just excited about it. And I like to dive into it. Are you you read books? Do you have time to read books?
Get into the turkey hunting stuff? I have a big stack of books in my bedroom on a desk that I see something interesting online. I go on Amazon, it's there in 2 days, and then it's in the stack. But yeah, I get into phases where I read every night. But right now, I'm not in the reading every night part of my year. So, but if you've got something interesting, I'll be glad to hear it and give it a try.
Well, yeah, I know I love that because I've definitely the ebb and flow of reading is for sure. But I'm a ruffed grouse hunter, and the number of books written on ruffed grouse hunting is like, you know, you can't count them. It's just like, it's a well covered topic, relatively speaking, compared to other birds. And I thought it would be easier to find more books on turkey hunting. And I feel like I've hit off some of the big ones now, you know, the 10th Legion and the Tom Kelly books. I've read a few of those, and man, there isn't one that I've read yet that I haven't really enjoyed because it's all so new to me.
Yeah.
There's a couple done by Wild River Press that I think are called Turkey Men. One of my former guests was talking to me about those, but if you got any turkey hunting book recommendations,
I've not really read anything other than those, you know, 10th Legion and stuff like that. So,
Well, we will squirrel that away for later, but I do want to know, like, so before you got into red dots and Meadow Creek mounts and stuff, what were your first turkey guns like? And then kind of lead me into, like, was there an aha moment or a specific hunt that said, like, hey, I got to do something about this? Like, how did Meadow Creek mounts happen?
Yeah. So started out with just shooting I went to Walmart and bought a $300 Remington 870, 3.5 inch, and buying whatever shells I could find, you know, nitro turkey 5 or 6 or 4s, and they kill a turkey just fine. But we would, you know, set up in the yard and shoot at a can at 40 or 50 yards. If you put a pellet or two in it, you said, well, if that's where his head is, it's good enough.
Right.
And for, you know, you were kind of limited to 40 yards, and I still try to keep to that, but got into like shooting heavy 6s and heavy 7s with that same gun and a scope. And when you shot those 3.5 inch heavies, you knew it was kind of like a, I don't know, like a badge of honor or something. For a week, I would have a big knot right here and my face would be sore. So it's like, you knew you'd killed a turkey for a while. It kills on both ends. So started, you know, that scope was a little bit awkward to use. Started changing over to different kinds of shot types. And when I finally put a red dot on, you just open up your field of view, and you don't have to be dead centered on the gun. You're not trying to look through a little tube. You can shoot with both eyes open. It just makes it a lot easier to hit what you're aiming at when you've got a good solid reference and you're not blocked by the barrel and the bead and all that. Because when you go to aim at a turkey, you want his head sitting right on top of the bead. Well, if he were to duck down, you might not see, you know, you block out almost the entire rest of his body by the barrel and the bead. So getting that dot floating out in space allows you to, you know, pull it down on his wattles and squeeze off, and you can still see if he's about to move or something like that. So that was really it. I missed a lot of turkeys I used to miss with just a bead. And that's kind of why I went to the scope. Got a lot better there, but still just knew there had to be something better. Had red dots on some guns that were kind of back close to my eye. And they worked okay, but really, I mean, for the most part, these are designed for pistols and ARs, and you use them out at arm's length. So when I had a gun that wasn't drilled and tapped, I started thinking, you know, as being an engineer, how can I do this on this gun? Saw tons of people asking questions online, you know, how do I mount a red dot? My gun's not drilled and tapped. And there'd be a variety of answers. And I finally was like, you know what, we're going to clamp onto the rib and see what happens. So tested that out for 2 years and just really realized that that's the place for it. Gets it out away from you. You can see around it real well out by your hand. You're not gonna fog up, you're not gonna fog it up by breathing on it in the early morning because
Yeah.
it's out further. So that turkey, you know, you can see them coming all the way. You don't have to move to see around the glass, because looking through the glass on these things, you know, they're not magnified. They're not as clear as just, I mean, there's some with really great glass, but you're never going to be as clear as just looking out through the open, you know. Looking through
Sure.
that glass is always going to be a little bit different than that. So getting that out away from you gets it out of your view, and or out of your from blocking a lot of view. And
Yeah.
just it's they're easy to use, they're easy to put on, you know, no modification needed. So that's when I started using that one, I was knew I was never going back. So
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I have very little, as you know, we'll talk about a little bit, but I've got no experience basically using a red dot at all. And I've been turkey hunting for, I don't know, 6 years now. And you know, I get excited about things. Like, I'm ready to go buy whatever gear I need for a given pursuit, but I try to keep it pretty simple, especially when it came to the gun. I was like, you know, I have my old 870 Express, my youth model 20 gauge. Like, I started in the era of TSS, so I didn't have to mess around too much. I just went straight to that and have shot all my turkeys so far with that 870, except for the first one, which I used a 12 gauge because I thought I'm going turkey hunting. You got to have a 12 gauge, right?
Yeah.
So, but now
That
I've
was the
now
case for a
I've
long time, for the most part.
it, exactly. Yeah. Yep. So I went there and I just was using the bead, but everybody that I've talked to that talks about red dots kind of like has that same sentiment. I mean, it seems to be one of these things that's overwhelmingly positive. Like, when you get it set up and you get it the right way, and for some of the reasons that, I mean, we'll go into more detail maybe, but just keeping your eye on that bird makes a lot of sense. And actually, I've had pretty good luck so far. I knock on wood, I have not missed one yet, but I was going to ask you about that because it's one of these things. Like, a shooting a turkey is standing still. Like, how do you ever miss one, right?
Yeah,
And
you think
I know my day will come, but last year was maybe the closest I'd come, where I had a tom come in. I was hunting in Wisconsin with my buddy Ted, and this bird, it kind of it as turkeys do, like the situation did, like it looked like it was going to happen right away, but then it kind of dragged out, right? And this bird, he was above us and below a lip, so we couldn't see him. And we thought for sure this bird is right there, like 10 yards in front of me. And my buddy Ted was actually doing some clucks and some purrs to try to get him to pop his head up, because we were very sure he was there. Well, sure enough, eventually his head did come up right where we thought, but it was like that was all I could really see. And I had vitals and everything, but my barrel was blocking a good bit of it. And I took the shot, and I don't have a great recollection of like a super focused shot. I think I just, like, there he was, and I took the opportunity, and I shot, and I ran up the hill pretty quick, and he was there. He was not down, so I had to put a finishing shot on him. Like, he didn't go anywhere, but I was very relieved for that to happen. But that was sort of like, you know, it doesn't take much. Like, you think you got TSS and he's 10 yards away and he's standing still, but stuff can still happen. But
Yeah.
that visual thing that you talked about, I think, makes a ton of sense, being able to see more of the bird at all times.
Yep. For sure. Yeah, it's a big deal, 'cause like you said, stuff like that, or if he were to even if he came full into full view, you might not realize that you can, you know, there's a lot more you can see, or there might be another. I've back in
Yeah.
the back in probably 10 or 15 years ago in Georgia, you used to be able to kill, I think you could kill all three of your birds in one day. Now it's two birds and only one a day. But I, similar situation. I was below a turkey and he came up, and I mean, he wasn't 15 yards. I shoot and go up there and there's another bird behind him. I'm like, oh no, flopping. And I'm like,
Yeah.
oh, what happened there? And I went up there, and luckily it was a jake, but I killed a gobbler and a jake the same day. That again, that was 10 or 12 years ago when that was legal. But you know, you can't, that was with just a Mossberg 500 with just the iron sight, adjustable iron sights, and
Yep.
you're focused on that, and you're blocked out. So who knows, maybe I would have known that there was something else back there, because obviously it was
Right.
within the path of my barrel. You know, I should have been able to see something. It's not like it went over the hill and just happened to hit him. So
Yeah.
yeah, that's a big deal sometimes.
Yeah. The vi visibility seems like a lot, but then getting into, like, you know, where it's mounted on the gun and how you do that. So when it came to that, like, were you, did you try one that was mounted closer to you and you saw issues with it? And then, like, what was there any, there was like nothing on the market to mount it like a Meadow Creek mount, or like what led you to think like, hey, I got to build this myself?
Right. So the first one I tried was the, it was between the stock and the receiver. So it was like really like right in close. Front of your eye. So,
okay.
Just a little bit of fitment issues there. They never did. And you can go read about them as much as you want, but they never did really stay tight. They were just kind of, they worked. I killed turkeys with it, but never was super happy with it. Some people are, that's good enough for some people. Some people that's not good enough for. And I see that every day with my customers. You know, I get questions about all kind of little stuff that either matters or doesn't, but just because it doesn't matter to me doesn't matter, mean it doesn't matter to half my customers. So hunted with that, and then the typical gun that comes with like a Picatinny rail, you know, and you have a Picatinny and a Picatinny mount, and then your optic on top of that, you're just up real high. I knew I didn't want something like that, because you don't really have to have a cheek weld with the reflex style sights, which is one of the great things about them, but still most people want one. And we had talked about this a little the other day on this style of sight. When you're aimed, once you've got it sighted in, it doesn't matter if you're twisted up and that dot is in the corner of the optic of the window, it's going to hit wherever that dot is. So
that's
kind of,
that's crazy. That's like a mind, like kind of like messed up to think about. Like, yeah, my,
it is
like, I'm
it is
the,
weird. I guess it has shotgun. To do with the lens shape. Because I've tested a bunch of stuff. Like, I'll put it on this lead sled, and say you were to build a mount that's an inch higher. Well, that only thing that does is makes your head go an inch higher, and that only changes your point of impact by an inch. People think that a taller mount is making their point of impact way off. What would change it would be, and we're getting way into science now, but yeah, what would change your point of impact a lot is a 1 degree tilt in your optic. But if you have this optic dead on at 40 yards and you move it straight up an inch, that's the same thing as moving your gun straight up an inch. As long as you stay, sure, you know, parallel to the earth going down range, it's only going to move your point of impact by an inch. Yeah. So anyway, I've played around with a bunch of that stuff, and you know, people don't want to be hovering above their stock. You just get a lot more stability when you've got your cheek on the stock, whether it's buried into it or what. So anyway, those would stack up really high, and just knew that getting it out on the rib, you know, you can see it's as low as, you know, it's as low as possible. On there, and just gives you a, you know, again, you don't have to have the reference to keep it centered, but it's still, people want it as low as they can get it. They'd have it lower than that if it was possible, but
right,
it's got to go somewhere. Yep. So
well, and it's interesting too, because again, I'm the upland guy hunting with like a custom fit side by side, where it's all about that consistency of cheek
right.
weld.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you know, the gun fit is done in the way to make it so that my cheek is my anchor, and I'm always looking down the barrel the same way. So for me, that's kind of like a comfort zone, like being on the stock and on the gun. And I don't do a ton of like sort of head up shooting,
right,
looking through a scope, rifle shooting, anything like that. So that really appealed to me right away. And I got turned on to you by my friends Jacob and Andrew, the Southern Outdoorsmen. They were I was asking them about turkey hunting and sights and everything, and they're the ones that kind of steered me in your direction. So it's fascinating. Again, these sites, do you think is it the last 5-10 years that the red dots have gone crazy in turkey hunting, or is it been going
probably
on
probably at
than
least
that?
10 years. Yeah, I mean, you can go back on some of the I mean, and that's where a lot of the motivation for Meadow Creek came from, was just seeing people asking about it, you know, how do I,
yep.
And a lot of that asking was going on when that part of it was growing. And now if you ask, almost every answer will be Meadow Creek. So, but one thing that is probably going to be interesting too, if you have a lot of upland hunters listening. So, you know, you were talking about your cheek being basically your rear anchor and your,
yeah.
So I get questioned a lot about, people will say, well, you know, my gun's shooting, and this is without a red dot, this is just the bead, and they're like, it's shooting 4 inches high, and I changed the shims on it, it's still shooting 4 inches high. It's like, well, you're changing the fit, which is fit is what, you know, you're throwing it up and it's here. That matters to someone who's shooting without a dot at a moving target. If you're shooting at a steel target and you're aiming down the top of the rib with that bead, it doesn't matter what shim you have in it. You're still aiming down the top of the rib at a steel target for the most part. Most people aren't going to shoot a turkey and hope that their rear cheek is their reference, and they're not. You're wanting to look parallel down the top of the rib. So that's just something to keep in mind. If, you know, some of this stuff, it might tie back and make more sense if you think about it that way, where your rear anchor is moving for fit, not really for changing the point of impact. But the way you shoot a flying bird, it does change your point of impact. So
yeah, yep. No, and it does. It makes perfect sense, especially in that, you know, every gun, no matter what make, model, what, like, point of impact, regulate, everything's, it's all, every gun's gonna have its own nuances. So the red dot is kind of like the equalizer, and which is a necessity for shooting turkeys, because it's like you kind of need that precision, right? Especially if you're shooting tiny little, you know, TSS patterns, full choke, that sort of thing. Like, you don't have the, it's not the same thing as shooting a rough grouse flying through the air with a cylinder choke, where it's like almost a little bit more like an art versus like the precision of just putting that pattern where it needs to be to make a good clean kill on turkey. The red dot kind of neutralizes some of those fit adjustments, and like you said, and head position, that's a big one. Like, that's sort of part of turkey hunting, part of the hunt. Like, you can get caught off guard and you don't have time to make your perfect gun mount every single time. You may be sitting against that oak tree for 35 minutes and you got a root digging into your side, and it's like all you could do to get the bead on the bird. So that, again, I haven't used them, but it makes a ton of sense to me just given what I've learned in the last handful of years.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so maybe now is the time to talk about this is like, what is a reflex sight, and are not all red dots reflex sights?
Yeah, there are different styles. So there's prism style sights, there's reflex sights. And we kind of talked about, like I said, so this is just a, I don't know how well I'll be able to see it, but it's just an open reflex. There's an emitter back here that you see the reflection in the glass. That's one where it doesn't matter where your head's positioned or anything like that. A lot of the enclosed or some of these, like the Venom is a good, it's a similar style. It's an enclosed, which means that it has a piece of glass in the back. So you can't get water between the emitter and your glass. So like if a little drop of water gets on, you know, where your light is coming from, it can starburst your sight.
Okay.
So that closed one, some of the other styles, I've had some in the past where if you really pay attention, set it up in a lead sled like this and look down range and move your head, that will move on target. So sticking to the something like the Burris Fast Fire 3, the Venom enclosed, a lot of the Hollow Sun optics, they're really good about staying on target no matter where your head position is. So there's like I said, there's prism sights, there's stuff like that. The prism sights are really good if you have an astigmatism. That's really the main benefit there, but they are going to be more of a bigger style optic that's going to sit higher. I have an astigmatism. I just deal with it. I see three dots that are kind of in a semicircle with like a spike coming off the top of one of them. I just put that, you know, that on his neck and shoot.
I've done enough shooting to know where that's going to go.
Yeah. I have customers that will call and say, man, I got to return this because I, you know, it's starburst and I've got astigmatism. I can't use it. And I'm like, you know, that's up to you. I mean, I'll take it back if you're not happy with the sight, but because of your, you know, the way you see it, but I just deal with it. I'm not trying to put one pellet in his neck. You know, I'm trying to get close to his neck and shoot. So that's something to think about. If you've ever been tested for it, or for the stars at night look real, not like just a circle or
starbursty.
Driving at night, all the street lights, that means you have an astigmatism, and it could play a factor when you're using a red dot. That just, it's still way easier to shoot than trying to look at a bead and line it up with nothing, or line it up with a rear and front sight and all that.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of different styles. Turkey hunting world, I would say, is pretty much dominated by the Burris Fast Fire 3. This new Vortex Venom, though, it's a good one. They just came out with that maybe I think we might have had them last spring. I can't remember. But that's a good price point on those, and it being enclosed and auto, you know, auto adjusting and stuff like that. It's really nice.
Yep. So the enclosure, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was kind of curious what, again, having very little experience with this stuff, like what that even, but it's like you have glass in the front and the back, so your reticle is secured from the elements. So if you were out with a not enclosed one and it's like a rainy, misty day, you could get into issues.
Never personally had issues. I mean, most of them come with some type of cover. The Burris comes with a cover that's actually a plastic cover with plastic lenses in it, so you can keep the whole thing covered. And then say it's raining, you're walking around, and then you start hunting, and it lightens up, or bird starts coming in, you can take that cover off, or you can shoot with the cover. But if it's been pouring rain, it's gonna have water on that cover. It's never cost me a bird, and I hunt a lot, 8, 10, 12 states a year. So I'm out, and when you go on a trip, if it's raining that day, you're going hunting. You're not picking and choosing. And so I'm out in the rain a lot. I don't let it concern me, even with the open ones like the Burris. But it is something to think about. If it's starbursted, it's probably just a little drop of water on that lens that the emitter is right behind.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk a few more of the basics of like what we're going to find in the sites that you're selling, like as far as reticles.
Yep.
You know, like I'm thinking battery, changing batteries, motion detection, auto on off. I mean, I think I've done enough research to know like some of the basic features that are in most good sites, but for somebody that has no idea, talk through how the motion sensing and batteries and that kind of stuff works.
Yeah. So we, first of all, anything that I sell is something I've used, tested. I may not have hunted with it, but it's something that we, you know, I've had a couple other brands in the past, and if you saw something in the past that's not there anymore, there's a reason for it. So the stuff that's there is stuff that we've used. We don't get a lot of calls about, you know, that there's an issue with that. But so there, a lot of the older optics used to have the battery on the bottom, so you had to take it off to put a new battery in. Most of what we have is going to be, the battery's going to be on the top. It's just like a coin-sized battery.
Like a CR32 or whatever.
Yeah, so we'll talk about batteries first. The Holler Suns, a lot of those have a solar backup with a smaller battery that's in like this drawer right here. So it's just a tray that slides out. It's probably a little easier to change the battery in this than this one. This one can, from time to time, can maybe be hard to start. I usually don't have any issues with it. And then like on this Venom, it's a different one, so I'm glad I have it sitting here. It's going to be just a big side. The battery goes right there in the side. So just a big, you don't have to take it off. That just unscrews, the battery goes in the side, and you are good to go. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. Again, most of everything we have now is you're not going to have to take it off to change the battery out. And don't have to worry about a seal on the bottom. Some of those that have a battery on the bottom, you have to have some kind of gasket or seal or O-ring around it. Well, that's great, but our mounts also have holes in them too. So you might seal around the battery, but it's got to be screwed onto the gun and screwed to your optic somehow. So there could be a possibility for moisture getting in on some of those. And then the dot options, there's red dots, there's green dots, there's circles, there's red circles, green circles, then there's a circle with a dot, and then circle with just a small crosshair. So we carry all that kind of stuff. Some of the Holler Suns, you can switch between a dot and a circle if you want to try different ones. What I find, since I have an astigmatism, is the circle is no good for me, because instead of three little dots, when I go to a circle,
I see three circles,
and it's just too much. Now, you know, I have a lot of people that like the circle, because they can, in theory, you can, these have a 32 MOA circle. So you're thinking at 40 yards, you've got about a 13, 14 inch. That's how big it would be. Well, if you figure if his head's anywhere in there and you've got a 13 or 14 inch pattern, he's dead. I like the precision of aiming at his neck. I don't like the precision of, oh, his head got close to the circle on a shot. Well, if I jerked it by 3 inches this way, I might miss him because I thought the circle was good enough. But that's the thought there for a lot of people is doing that, and then if they get it in the circle, and that's perfectly fine. Everyone likes something different. I get asked daily what I recommend, and I'm like, well, I recommend this one, and people say, what's on your gun? I tell them what's on my gun, and that's what they buy. But we carry the different colors, different dot styles, just because everybody wants something different. So. So yeah, that, and most of what we have is just going to be the smaller style sight. Some people will put a bigger tube style. I recommend something smaller and low profile. It's just a lot easier to use. So
yeah, without having personal experience, it seems to me like something small that like you said, you can mostly, 99% of turkey hunting is you're looking around, observing, watching everything. It's only that last second where you got to get down on the site and narrow in. I kind of like the aim small, miss small of the dot.
Yeah.
So this is kind of funny. Actually, my I have two young boys. They're hunters. He's going to be 8 in next week, actually. And he started tagging along with me. And so we've been talking about turkey hunting, getting all excited. And I've been talking to him about, because this gun behind me is kind of, I bought it for the boys. That was my justification, right?
Yeah.
We needed a 28 gauge so they can start turkey hunting. And so we're talking about the red dot sight, and he's got all fascinated about that. And grandma went on to Amazon and bought him a very, very cheap red dot sight for one of his Nerf guns here at home.
Oh yeah.
So he could start playing around with it. And he actually got it yesterday, and we were having some fun with it. But just to sort of hit that point, like what the $25 Amazon red dot sight versus the stuff that you're talking about today, like what are people going to see differences as far as like quality, holding
and that's that one thing I missed in the last section was to talk about, and this ties into this as well, just the number of features, the glass quality, but the auto brightness feature. Some people love it, some people hate it. I use, for the most part, the Fastfire 3, the auto brightness is perfect for me. It also has 3 different settings for brightness. Some of the optics have a shake awake feature, which means it turns off after 10 minutes of no movement. But I mean, if you move it to put it on his head, it's on. So it's never really going to be off while you're hunting. I turn mine. I don't use one with the shake awake, but I turn it on when I get out of the truck, turn it off when I get back in. Tell people, if their battery dies, guess whose fault it is? I mean, it's a $3 battery. Just put one in every year, every 2 or 3 years is probably okay. If you just put one in it every year. So,
and have an extra one in your
pack. Yeah, have an extra one there. Most of them are easy to change. But so like on the $25 Amazon version, you're just going to see a difference in glass quality, clarity through the glass, and then a lack of most of those features. So auto brightness, shake awake, and stuff like that. And we've tried to sell some of those, get a lot of returns on them. Different brands. There's probably 1,000 brands on Amazon that you can buy of a cheap red dot. And there, a lot of them are labeled airsoft for a reason. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes, again, like most people listening to this podcast probably are, under the mentality of like, there's a difference between quality gear and something that you're, bargain basement prices. But for all intents and purposes, like you said, you go on Amazon and there's 100 of them, and they all kind of look and feel and they seem similar, and it turns on and it works. But do you trust that when you get out into the field? Obviously, if you needed a starting point, maybe something, but that was my assumption. So battery life, obviously these things don't take a ton of power to run, but like replacing the battery every year, you're going to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, most of them are labeled 20,000 to 50,000 hours on the battery, which is a long time, but obviously there's depends on the brightness you've got it set on and stuff like that.
I've
been hunting a long time. I've never been out in the woods and my battery been dead. Just again, I put a new one in it every year because it's a $3 battery they sell at Dollar General. So
yeah,
don't risk it. Yeah. And then, like you said, keep an extra in there. All the Suns do have the solar backup. So that's a major selling point on those because plenty of people are worried about it because they had some kind of red dot on their crossbow 15 years ago that took a, you know, a bigger battery or something, and that thing would die three or four times in a season. So that's how that's where the technology used to be compared to where it is now. It's not even the same kind of optic as what people are scared away from the past.
Yeah, that makes sense. And we haven't gotten it there, but when you were talking about the replacing the batteries and stuff, that obviously is important that you don't have to take the sight off to replace the battery, because zeroing, patterning, checking all that stuff, like you undo everything if you got to take the sight off, basically.
Yeah, even if you have to take the sight off, it shouldn't move any, because we've got, you know, the recoil lugs on there, so it lines up right where it is. But still, there's a peace of mind thing. You take an optic off and put it back on, you're gonna want to shoot it. So.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because I recall looking at that. But how does the mount? Well, okay, what are the different mounting options? Because you got a couple different kinds, right?
Yep. So
and I can see that over under behind you. So if you want to highlight that, but then we can talk about my Mossberg SA-28. That's drilled in tap. So is there anything different?
Yep,
for
there
that?
There is. So we sell mounts for both. So basically, what we have is, this is our rib mount. It's got a slot cut into it. We're kind of making some changes. We're starting to make them, and it's actually something that's kind of ongoing right now. It's a change. We used to make a universal model that came with a bunch of different rib adapters, because all guns have a different rib. Well, what we found is most people, when they order a mount, they want to go down the selection chart and click, oh yeah, that's my gun, that's what I need it for. If they get a universal mount, they think it's not as good for their gun as it could be, you know, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Because a lot of things that are universal aren't. And I mean, the way ours work, that's not really the case. There's still a fit for that gun, but we're changing some things. So the slot is either going to be cut for your gun, or it'll come with different rib adapters. So it just goes on top of the rib. And then there's I don't have a thinner one here, but we make two different style plates. This one's thicker, but for an over under, you need a thinner. Well, you do a thinner heat treated steel one, which is what's on there. That will go under the rib, and then it'll clamp together the screws, and then the optic will sit right on top of it. So it's simple. They're secure. I get asked that every day too. It's like, is this going to move? And I just tell them, we would have been out of business 6 years ago if it did.
Right.
I mean, you're welcome to go read the reviews. They don't move. So once they're clamped on, they're not going anywhere. But we did start making receiver mounts as well. Like for a gun that comes drilled and tapped back here on the receiver, it's not really going to fit on this gun, but I can show you where it goes, because this is this is an over under. So it just, its rib goes all the way to here. But yeah, that mount will just go there, following the profile of your barrel or the top of your receiver. Screw down into the factory drilled and tapped holes, or if you have someone drill and tap it, and then optic sits right on top of it. Again, we got the recoil lugs on there, so once you put it on there, it doesn't really, it's not going to move. It's secure. So those are the two main styles that we have, the receiver mount and a rib mount. I personally will never use a receiver mount, just because I like it being out on the rib. And also, your gun is always going to shoot where your barrel's aimed. It's not always going to shoot where your receiver's aimed. So not saying there's a lot of, most time people have it tightened down, there's not movement there, but there is a possibility. So
sure. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Having the sight on the barrel is kind of the most direct line of sight.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I know the red dot sights are pretty good about like having different, like mounting plates and screws and all that kind of stuff. But so part of your mount comes with a piece that attaches to a given red dot. Is that how that works?
Yeah. So our mounts are footprint specific. So, there's different optics use a different like size of recoil lugs, location of recoil lugs, same thing with the screw holes to hold it down size. But there's really three or four main ones that most what get used. There's a lot of overlap there, but it is a consideration. We don't make one that's multiple footprint, because what happens there is, this optic is wider than this optic. So if I make one that is multiple footprints, if you have this optic, then your plate's going to be wider than it needs to be.
Right.
This one's longer than this one, so then it would have to be longer as well. So it's not, you know, you just got a lot bulkier product than if you have one that's made to the size of your optic. So it's not sticking out on the sides or on the length. So Again, there's a lot of overlap there. The older Vortexes and the Burruses use one. The Holosuns are an RMR, which is the same as like Trigicon. And then the new Vortexes use the same as like a Loophole Delta Point Pro. So those are the main ones. We do have some others for bottom mount optics, like a Sig Romeo 5 that's a tube style. Acro, which is the new Fastfire E, and the Steiner. And, you know, somebody, I'm a one-man company, so somebody calls and wants something, I try to, you know, try to do what I can. I don't want to lose a customer because I don't have a mount for them. So I've got stuff that I made 50 of, and I sell one a month because somebody needed, someone wanted a certain footprint for their optic, and it's just not a very common one. So, So there's,
that's good for, again,
there's
good
four
for
main ones, but we have 7 or 8 footprints available.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Love that. Okay. Let's talk about, like, once we get it on, and again, this is Nick, who's never used a red dot before. When I get it on, what's my method for zeroing, patterning, getting it all dialed in?
Yeah. So if you're using a rib mount, a lot of times I'll pop the barrel off and just set it on something and kind of bore sight it. If you don't have a laser bore sighter, bore sight it by eye, you know, looking down the barrel, centering it and getting it close.
Yep.
You don't really have to do that. You can start it. I like to start at 15 yards with just a target load, you know, number eights or whatever, because you're going to have a circle about like this. Shoot that, get it sighted in at 15 yards, and then go to your hunting distance. I like to stay about a 30-35 yard range for my final sight in, because I know I'm still going to have it's going to look like a circle. I'm going to be able to find the center of it. It's not going to start spreading out too much.
Yeah.
So go to 35 yards, use something like a lead sled to get you close. Some people like to just do it like they're hunting, so they'll sit up against a tree with it on their knee. As long as you can be dead still, that's perfectly fine too. But make sure when you do your final sight in that you are using, you've done all your patterning and you're using the actual choke and load that you're going to hunt with, because it can and will change your point of impact. I don't think back in the lead days when we were spraying lead all over a whole piece of paper, we didn't realize that changing that stuff was moving it a little bit, and it does.
Yeah.
But when you've got a good reference circle with a high quality shell, you're going to see differences if you change anything. So do your final sight in with that. And they sight in just like a rifle. If you need to move, right, you turn the dial right, and we can get into it. If this is going to confuse you, then mute this for the next minute. But so what actually happens when you turn the dial right, it's going to move your point of impact right. But what it actually does is moves your dot left. So same thing with up and down. It's actually, and you can technically sight in with just one shot. And if you shoot once and know you need to move over 5 inches, if you can put it back in a lead sled, put it back on the target, aimed at the center again, and move your dot over to your point of impact, well, that's where your dot needs to be. But it confuses people when they start turning it to the right and their dot moves left. That's because it's moving your point of impact over. So it's just how it works. Again, I don't want to confuse people, because it does confuse people when you talk about it like that. But if you can hold a good reference, you can move to your old point of impact from your original point of aim, and not even really have to shoot again if you want to just do one shot.
Yeah, that's
it's called the bullseye to bullet hole technique. So there's reading on it and YouTube. We actually did a really good video with Jacob and Andrew a few years ago. So all that stuff is there. But again, some people, it just confuses them too much. So
yeah, when you consider, because I was gonna say, like, you know, it's kind of the inconvenient truth, like if you change your choke or load even a little bit, like it could, like, you don't really want to accept that, but it's like, I might have to go back out and check it on paper. And when you consider the cost of TSS, the idea of doing something that you're talking about to sort of lessen the number of rounds you got to shoot is actually very beneficial.
Yeah. And that's why you do all your, you know, your patterning before sighting in. When you're patterning a gun, and it's different for, again, different from bird, you know, upland, that's what choke you're using. And if you're patterning, I know that, you may pattern some guns and you're maybe shooting a 40-inch circle or whatever, but it's all about your fit and where you're throwing up and where it's hitting. When you're patterning for a turkey, you don't care that it's shooting 6 or 7 inches off if you're going to use a red dot, because you know at the end of the day you're going to tune that in, you're going to sight that in. You're just trying to find
Correct.
The best choke and load for your gun. You don't care if your gun's shooting 8 inches left, because yeah, again, your red dot's going to fix that. So there's a big difference too that it might take people a minute to get, because a lot of patterning when you were not using an optic did have to do with how well it's hitting where you're aiming. That was part of the patterning process. But those two processes are completely split apart when you're using an optic. And what I do is, after I get sighted in, I have a laser that goes into the end of the barrel, and I'm pretty good at judging yardage, like 20 yards, or I can step off 20 yards perfectly. So what I'll do is I'll step off 20 yards, I'll put that laser in and turn my red dot on and go put a piece of paper out there. I'll mark on the paper where my laser is hitting and where my red dot is hitting with this choke that I've got in the gun. A lot of times those aren't the same. They're off 5 or 6 inches, just because, you know, for multitude of reasons. And I'll keep that reference sheet with me. If I'm going across the country, that laser bore sighter goes with me with my reference sheet. And I write on there, this gun, this choke, this distance, this is where my laser is, and this is where my red dot is. So if anytime I think I bumped it or something happens, you miss a turkey, you're like, man, something must have happened, you can always step off 20 yards, put that sheet up and say, no, it's still right where my dot's still right where it's supposed to be. So that's just a quick tip to keep you from having to shoot if you're on the road, or even confirm the next season if you're not changing anything. It keeps you having to shoot again.
That's getting into the weeds a little bit, but that's very helpful.
Okay so
we got the sight on, obviously starting with the, I get that sort of, I don't have like a lead sled or something to totally lock in the mark, but that's something to consider. If you can keep that rather than shooting freehand, or even just with an assist,
I mean,
you can lock that gun into place.
You don't have to do that method. If you're 5 inches to the right and you need to turn it left, there's a certain MOA per click. You know, it's just a simple calculation. If you're shooting at 40 yards, it's basically moves 40% of what it would at 100 yards. So just know that you can do those clicks, and you're probably going to want to shoot again if you do that. But if you'll measure everything on the target, it's simple to do. So,
okay. So once you got it on there and you are zeroed in, like maybe a year goes by, and the next season, you know, you kind of walked us through your method of, you got the reference sheet to check it. Somebody else like just kind of take it out and shoot an 8-shot, see if it's relatively on any other habits or things that you do to kind of make sure things are as they should be.
Yeah. I mean, as long as it's tight and doesn't look like it's moved, it hasn't moved. So, the only thing that, you know, optics do go bad, that's just something that happens. I mean, it's a small electronic part. That would be the only thing. If it's gone bad and it's moved or something, that simple check will at least let you know that you're still close and that hasn't happened, because that does happen from time to time. Luckily, everything we sell has great warranties, whether they're lifetime, or I think one of the ones we used to sell said 50,000 rounds. Well, that's basically, they're just doing that as a catchphrase for advertising. It's basically a lifetime warranty. So, any issues with any optics will be fixed by the manufacturer.
Okay. any examples come to mind of like where the red dot exposed something, surprised you? Kind of like what you were saying, really, where your red dot might be looking here, the bore laser is pointing up there, and the pattern's moving up there, right? Like that, the gap between where the bore laser is and the red dot. Any other examples come to mind where you sort of saw something that really surprised you?
I mean, that was, I guess, sort of surprising, but like the main thing that's surprising is you take a choke tube and just try a different brand or a different one from you know, like take your factory choke tube or an aftermarket yep. one and just see how much that moves with the laser, because the laser I use is in the choke. I've tried the ones that go in the chamber. Maybe it's because I was buying a $12 Amazon special. You spin them in the chamber and you can see the laser moving. So it's like had to index
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And every time I was like, yeah, this ain't what I need to be doing. I need to have it in the choke. But yeah, just looking at how much some of that stuff changes and point of impact change between just different styles of shot. I load my yeah. own, so most of my stuff is same stuff every year. But for someone that's, you know, bought two or three boxes this year and then can't find that, or, you know, it's quit being made, or it's out of stock and they have to buy something else, just make sure you check that for sure, because it is surprising yeah. how much different they are.
All right, you get asked this every day, but walk me through end to end your Greg's turkey hunting setup, gun, choke, load, everything, red
yeah,
dot.
So it's actually sitting over there, but I'm not gonna get up and go get it. But it's a Mossberg 20 SA20.
Okay. All
right. With a rib mount and the Burris Fastfire 3. To me, that's just, those guns are, did you get the 28 or the 20? I forgot.
I got the 28.
Yeah, the 28, man. Those guns are, they're built for turkey hunting. They're great. They shoot great. All the Turkish made guns shoot great. But yeah, shooting a TruLock 585 with hand loaded TSS 8s. I used to shoot okay. 9s. I've shot 9.5s. What I find with the 8s is you just get a lot less in the breast when you're cleaning the bird, a lot less shot. I mean, and for the most part, even 9s, they go straight. People don't realize it. 9 goes through the side, through the bird, and out. But, you know, if it happens to hit more on the way in or get stuck at the breastbone and get stuck in the breast, it happens less with the 8s, and you've still got way more pellets than you need to kill the turkey. So, it's the camo version with the pistol grip.
Okay.
I love having a pistol grip for turkey hunting. It's just
like
me
the tactical
another thing
grip.
To for me to be able to keep it sitting on my knee and do other stuff. It's just makes it a lot easier for me.
Yep.
So that's my turkey setup.
I carried mine for I think one day last year when I was backing up my buddy Ted, but I have not hunted with it yet. But I would have, if I was just buying it for me, I would have got the same gun that you did, the 20 gauge. Yeah. But my thinking was to get the 28 was, again, I got the two young boys come. I'm already set up to reload 28 gauge. So I was thinking I might, and I actually just got some TSS shot if I need to hand load some lighter stuff to get them started.
Yeah, that'll get them going.
Like you, I've been shooting 9 shot as well. And that was one of the things that really surprised me is I have yet to find a pellet in a I'm like, man, I know I'm throwing 600 pellets at this thing. Like, where are they? And so, and it's a good thing I haven't bit into one or anything like that yet. But, I'm very much looking forward to setting that up. So, again, when it comes to making the decision to mount receiver or rib, you kind of have walked me through that. I think I'm inclined to go the rib mount just based on what you're telling me, but any other consideration between like receiver or rib with knowing which gun I have?
Yeah. I mean, it's a personal preference. When I started doing it, 100% of the reason was to put on guns that weren't drilled and tapped. But once you actually use it in the field, you're like, man, this is a lot better. I get people that come by the booth at like the NWTF convention and say, hey, have you seen our mounts? Like, yeah, I like mine mounted back here on my receiver. And I'm like, well, have you tried it on the rib? And if 95% of people that tell me they like it on the receiver, it's because they haven't tried it on the rib. Now, I'm not saying everybody's different. Everybody likes different stuff, but they'll put it up and you can see that, like, they smile and they're like, man, I like that. I mean, it happens. Some people don't want to believe it because they haven't hunted with their buddy that's had one or been able to try it, but it just opens up your field of view so much. And I personally like it. And again, I sell both, so it doesn't really matter to me, but getting them on the rib is a place to have it.
Is there any height difference at all, or are they pretty much designed
to be as
low as possible?
The only height difference is going to be based on what kind of gun you have. Most guns, the top of the rib is level with the top of the receiver anyway, so it's going to be about the same. Some guns do have a raised rib. Still plenty of people using them on that one as well. So,
yep.
It was not drill and tapped. Obviously, that's your option. If it is, you've got a choice. I always steer towards the rib mount.
Yep. Okay, so I have to ask you this as the, you know, the Birdshot Podcast side-by-side guy. What about somebody that wants to put a red dot on a side-by-side? Is there a fix for that?
So,
some of them have a raised ventilated rib, but yeah, not all of them do.
For the most of those are going to be a solid rib. We don't have anything. It's something that we've toyed with. It would be like a very model specific one if we ever were able to do it, most likely.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got some of those guns change from year to year, with the rib sizes, but it's something that we can do at some point. It's just adding another thing to work through, because anytime we have something like that, if somebody's bound to get one that's like, well, this doesn't fit. And it's like, well, it was supposed to be for this gun, but for some reason, whatever, that gun changed a different time. So, we can do one, but I mean, you can also, drill and tap that rib, but a lot of those side-by-sides people aren't going to want to do.
Right.
So.
Right. Yep. Yep. Yeah. I'm not even really encouraging it, just because like my buddy Garrett, he's got an old Fox Sterlingworth, that he has kind of converted into his turkey gun. I mean, it would be like blasphemy to put a red dot on that gun. So it's kind of like, it's not the right purpose. And that's really what, you know, I love my side-by-sides for my upland bird hunting, but with turkey gun, I'm sort of approaching it with a little bit, just a fresh perspective and just doing things a little bit, kind of want to see what it's all about. Right. So I just, rather than even like mess around with a side-by-side, I'm just going all in on the DSA-28.
There you go. That's
red
dot
sight.
You're going to struggle to find something that shoots better than that SA-28. Lay your feeders for sure.
Yeah. I'm excited to put that one to the test. All right. Well, we're going to, like I said, we're going to have a promo code in the show notes. Listeners can save 10% site wide, for this turkey season. I guess we haven't talked about timeline or anything, but for the foreseeable future.
Yep.
When listeners hear this, I think we covered a ton of what I wanted to. Anything you think we missed? I think we covered different options, models, mounts, the idea behind them.
Yeah.
Anything else on your mind?
The only thing we missed was, you know, of course, 95% of my customers are always going to be turkey hunters. Well, we have used it for all kind of wing shooting. Some of the purists aren't gonna ever do it, but it can help shooting flying birds as well. It's kind of a cheat code. I'll be honest with you, they work really well. So something
I will say, my friend Bailey, she has a little, I believe it's a 410 with a red dot, and I think she told me that she was shooting, just kind of messing around shooting clays with it. And she was surprised at the effectiveness. Like, you think it's going to be this visual obstruction. I have not shot at anything flying or moving with a red dot, but I know some people are starting to do it. I would imagine the waterfowl space would kind of readily start taking this up.
Yeah, I actually went on my first duck hunt this past October. So,
okay.
I've just never done it, but of course I've shot doves with it, clays, everything, pheasants. So, anything that you're using a shotgun for, you can use a red dot. Well, I mean, unless there's some certain competition, you can't. But I'm saying, as far as any target you're shooting at, you can use a dot on.
Like since you have shot pheasants with it, does that, where we're having the red dot on the rib a little bit further away, is that a help?
Yeah, a lot easier to get on target when you throw it up real fast with it being out there, both eyes open. You know, you can still see the pheasant flying, and then stick it a little. We actually bought a shot cam for that October trip to North Dakota, and we pheasant hunted there too. So I got some really good footage of me shooting pheasants with it.
Heck yeah.
The duck, we got some footage of the waterfowl as well, but eight guys in the blind, it's like when you've got eight guns going off at one time, you know how it is. It's like, yeah, I killed that one. It's like, well, we can look at the shot cam and see, and it's like, maybe, but you still both shot at the same time. So it was still really hard to tell. There was a couple you could tell that it was definitely just me that shot, but with the pheasant, it was easy. It was two or three of us walking around, and I was the only one that shot, so obviously I hit it. It was good footage for that.
Awesome. Well, give me a, before we wrap up here, give me a quick preview of your season ahead. Like, what are you looking forward to? When you're obviously right in the thick of it, busy in the shop right now, but when do you get to start traveling and going around doing some stuff?
I was supposed to be in Florida right now, but I'm just too busy here. I had to cancel on some buddies. We had an Airbnb and all that, hunting some public in North Florida, and had to cancel that on them. They still went. So I'm hopefully taking my daughter this weekend. It's youth season in South Carolina.
Oh, cool.
I do have the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic that I'll be at, and it doesn't open until 11 on Sunday and like 9 or 10 on Saturday. So we might try to sneak in some hunts before it opens and get my wife to open up the booth for us so that in case we're a little bit late. So South Carolina, Georgia, I'm going out west again to Washington, Idaho, possibly Oregon, Michigan at the end of May, and probably just staying closer to home most of April, hunting North Carolina. I'm 10 minutes from North Carolina right here, so I can hunt North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia pretty easily from home. So
nice.
Still going to end up hitting 7 or 8, maybe 9 states, but trying to stay home during most of April. And that's pretty much my season.
Are you in pursuit of any kind of slam? I know that's kind of a thing with you guys.
I think I've killed turkeys now in 21 or 22 states, but probably 16 of those I've killed in at least 2 different times, and 12 of those I've killed in 3 or plus. So I like to go back to the places that are fun to hunt and go with buddies and take different buddies to some of those places. I don't have a big issue with people doing the slam, but now it's more of a go do it. Look what I did.
Like check the box. Yeah.
To me, it's one. And I'm not saying anybody in particular does this, but anyone can do it now. It's something somebody can, find a guide in any state to do. So I just try to do my own thing, and I'm sure eventually I'll get there, but I like going back and repeating states. I was actually in Massachusetts. One thing that got me away from doing it, I was in Massachusetts and I was driving down the road and heard a turkey gobble on the limb. And like, there was a place I could pull over, and I knew the next morning he would just fly out of that tree and land in front of me in this little field. And I was like, I don't want to just do that just to say I killed a turkey in this state. You know, I want to go hunt a bird, have fun. It's not about just saying I shot one here. So it kind of got me away from it when I didn't want to get stuck into that.
Yeah, that's good perspective. It's you have those plans and even sometimes like they sort of subconsciously affect like the decisions you're making. I like kind of become aware of that about like certain things like that I'm trying to do or not trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all good to kind of keep in perspective.
Yeah.
All right, man. If you could only hunt one bird the rest of your life, which one would it be? I might have an idea.
I mean, it would be turkeys for sure.
Fair enough.
And it would be eastern turkeys. I mean, all the others are great. They're fun to hunt, but man, hard gobbling eastern in some hardwoods, there's nothing better than that. So.
Okay.
Yep.
So a perfect day in the field for you is getting in the eastern turkey woods at sunrise and
hunting mountains or bigger hills and being around pines and hardwoods. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Love it. Favorite shotgun? Would that be your SA-20?
I mean, it is right now. Just again, they're $700 shotgun that's going to outshoot a $1,200-$1,500 shotgun that may have better parts, but as far as what it's going to put on the target, those Turkish made guns are great. And there's, the TriStars are great. There's a handful of different ones that are very good. So yeah, right now it's the SA-20.
And is there a dream hunt or something that you really want to do someday?
Not really. I've done a lot. I elk hunt every now and then. I've killed some big bulls, archery. Maybe this year I'm trying to draw a deer tag in Colorado. There's big changes coming in the next few years with the draw system. So and that'll just be DIY public land. So I'm putting in for that. I've got a good many points. So hopefully I'll get lucky there and knock that out, but we'll see. It'll be high country, above the tree line, camping for however long it takes. So that'd probably be it, just to kill a big muley with my bow. Even though I love turkey hunting, but I've never killed a I've never even really tried hard. So it takes so many points out there now for non-residents that it's not just something you can do. And there's no over the counter for deer there in Colorado. So for non-residents archery anyway, there's a lot of moving parts there, but yeah, hopefully I draw that tag and I can get it done.
My one opportunity.
Heck yeah. I hope you do. Yeah. It's always good to have something on the bucket list, something to aspire to.
So. Yep.
Excellent. All right, buddy. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to join us today. So we got MetalCreekMounts.com, right?
Yep.
Listeners can go there to find everything that you shared with us today, mounts, sights, all that kind of stuff. We're going to have a promo code. Check the show notes for that. Will likely be BSP10. Save 10% site-wide. And if folks have questions, how should they get in touch with you, buddy?
Yeah, so there's a contact form on the website. There's a second contact form in, like, when you get into the store. My phone number's on there. You can email me, Greg@Meadow Creek Mounts. If you call me and I don't answer, please leave a voicemail. No one ever does. It helps me solve your problem in the least amount of time. So, but I mean, shooting over an email or whatever is quick too. I like to try to take care of everybody as quickly as I can. So,
yeah. Well, I can attest you've been very responsive with me just setting this up. So I can only imagine how your customers feel. So, keep up the great work, buddy.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Again, thanks for taking the time today and sharing your knowledge. And hopefully we'll send some folks your way.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, buddy, have a great turkey season. Hang on with me for just a second. That does it for this episode of the Birdshot Podcast.
Hey, everyone, it's your host, Nick, here with one more thing before you go. I want to thank you for joining us for this episode of the Birdshot Podcast presented by Onyx Hunt. Be sure to subscribe and follow the show so you don't miss our next episode. And if you really love the show and want to contribute above and beyond what you already do by listening, you can do so by joining our Patreon community. Click the link in the show notes of this episode to learn more. You can sign up for as little as $5 a month. And if you do, I'll send you some of these Birdshot Podcast can coolers and stickers as a thank you from me. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Birdshot Podcast.